Hello and welcome to the Campaign Podcast. I'm Imogen Watson, Work and Inspiration Editor at Campaign. This podcast will revisit a panel from last week's Influencer 360 conference, which took place on April 10th and featured back-to-back panels exploring how creators shape culture, media, and social strategy. In the morning session, I was joined by content creator and Gen Z marketing specialist Shola West, who illuminated the often unspoken realities of influencer marketing, discrimination, pay disparities, and the marginalization of certain voices. It's a must listen, so listen up.
Right. Okay, like last time, we'll start with a brief introduction for our audiences.
Yes. Hey, everyone. So my name is Shola. I started my career as an apprentice doing digital marketing level 3. I then moved to a company called OMD UK. I don't know if you know them. They're a media agency. I was doing media partnerships and influencer marketing there. Some of my clients at the time were Channel 4, Barclays, PepsiCo, so quite like a range, sometimes Levi's. And then I moved to Complex UK as brand lead last year, and then now I'm officially like freelance doing my own thing. And then on the side, I have a page on TikTok called All Things Media Sis, where I basically help other people like myself from my background get into the media industry, because I found it really hard to get in at first. Like, I'm a young girl coming from Croydon, and like, I don't have anyone in my family that's done this before, and then obviously not going to uni as well. So I basically give CV tips, interview tips, job opportunities, shed light on like those exclusive events that you're like, how did you get in kind of thing. So yeah, that's a bit about me.
We've spoken previously about why you prefer the term creator over influencer. So in your view, what is the difference between the two terms?
Yeah, it's a really interesting conversation, because I don't know about you guys, but for me, I first heard about the word influencer when I was probably about 14 years old, and the first person that came to mind was like Kim Kardashian and like that sort of family. So when I think
sort of family.
Yeah, that family, right? So when it was introduced to me, it was very much like people who are from elite backgrounds who are shedding light on a lifestyle that's not really that attainable for the average person. You know, they'll tell you, have this lollipop and then you'll lose weight tomorrow. Take this hair pill and your hair's going to grow to the floor in a second. And like just all these unrealistic things. So that's kind of where I heard about the word influencer. And then as we've gone on with time, you know, that's kind of been there, but then we've had platforms like TikTok come about where people are just coming online in their headscarf, in their pajamas, talking about the cost of living, saying I can't afford my bills, all these things, and just being a lot more relatable. So I think for me, like as a content creator, because I know what I do is just to support other people, help put other people on, I don't really like to associate myself as an influencer, because I feel like, unfortunately, the word influencer, they weren't really influencing always positive change, whereas content creation comes across more like strategic and you're thinking about it in a different way. So
creators are increasingly selective with their brand partnerships. So as someone who has worked both brand side and agency side and is now a content creator yourself, how have you seen this evolve over time?
Yeah, I would definitely say it has evolved over time. Obviously, when I was talking about influencing back then, you didn't have to say hashtag ad, you didn't have to say paid promotion, you didn't have to disclose anything. So people could get away with literally promoting anything, like teeth whitening strips, but your teeth aren't white. Like anyone could just do what they want, right? But then over time, now you have to actually disclose that stuff. So people are naturally like, okay, cool, let me maybe be a bit more careful. And then, you know, my generation, Gen Z, we see through, like we can just see when it's obviously an ad, like you don't actually care about the product or you don't even use the product. So I definitely say it's changed. Like even for myself as a content creator where I promote opportunities for young people when they get into the creative industry, brands sometimes see that and will be like, oh, she's got an audience of Gen Z. I'm a tech company. Can you like promote our tech like graduate scheme, for example? And I have to say, yeah, although they're paying me, I have to say no, because it's not authentic to my audience. They're going to be like, why should I promote tech stuff? So I think people are a lot more conscious of what they're actually putting out there.
The influencer pay gap is a real, very real issue for creators from underrepresented groups. This is a really difficult problem to solve, but what would be your best advice and what's your experience in this issue?
Yeah, it's really difficult because there's so many different factors to it. So when I was working in the agency, there was a time where we had this campaign and there were two influencers. There was a white male and a black male. The black male had like way more followers. But when I asked them both for their rates, the white male was like, let's just say he said, I don't know, 2K. And then the black male said like £500. And we had a budget of 5K for each influencer. So I remember saying to my manager at the time, like, you know, this person's only quoted £500, we have 5K, like, considering they have the highest following amount, should I say something? But my manager was just kind of like, no, we need to just get the best value out of it and whatnot. So, but it just didn't sit right with me and my values. So, like, low-key behind my manager's back, I rang the creator and was like, up your rates, like, delete this email, send me a new email with new rates, just don't do that, whatever. So I managed to, like, get them up. But I felt I needed to do that because sometimes it's not always the brand's fault. Sometimes, and it's not the creator's fault either, but if you're somebody who's, like, the first influencer or whatever in your family or you don't have anybody in the media industry, it's really hard to know how to, like, make your rates. I only know because I worked in influencer marketing, or I wouldn't have a clue. So I think it's the job of, like, people like myself or anyone who's in the position where you're in between the client and the creator, and you can say, you know in your head you've got 5K budget, like, just tell them to up it. Like, I don't see why not, you know? Or otherwise we're not going to see change. So, yeah, that's what I would say.
Mm. How can the advertising and marketing industry enact genuine change from within and avoid tokenism and purpose washing?
Yeah, this is a topic because, yeah, I would say it's really two things. It's the front end stuff and then it's the back end. So on the front end, it's making sure that you're just not jumping at topics when it suits you. So, you know, those key calendar date moments where it's like Black History Month, Eid, Pride, you change your logo, you throw a party and you think you've done enough. Like, that's just frustrating. Make sure you're actually, like, picking a cause and you're doing stuff throughout the, you know, year or whatever it is. I always say don't feel pressured to pick every cause, though, because sometimes that within itself can come across as inauthentic when you're just trying to support everyone. But pick something and then make sure you're actually engaging with that audience throughout the time. And then also something that people don't speak about is the back end side of things. So I've been, like, the only Black girl on so many campaigns where I've had to say, like, someone said something and I know if that comes out, we're going to get cancelled. So I've had to say, can we, like, remove that? Can we change that? But that's a lot of pressure on one person. So if companies could do a better job at having more people who represent the people you want to in your campaigns, in the back end, as the content creators, as the marketing people, as the strategists, so that everyone can kind of have a view on it as well. And then hopefully actually make inclusive campaigns, and we won't have all these campaigns coming out where everyone's upset because the people who they're reflecting are actually behind the scenes as well.
Which builds into the next question about Pink Honey influencer trip, which recently sparked some controversy. What did they do wrong? And what lessons can brands learn from such missteps?
Yeah, that was a big deal on TikTok. So I don't know if anyone, like, knows it, but sorry, for anyone who doesn't know, basically Pink Honey are, like, a beauty TikTok shop brand on TikTok. And they have, like, loads of different creators from different backgrounds who'd always promote their stuff. We're talking different races, ages, backgrounds, disabilities, etc. So that was all good. They had a great audience, whatever. Then they decided to do this PR trip where they only brought out white women who basically looked the same. So it caused a lot of outrage because they felt like, you know, I'm putting time into your brand, I'm promoting it, and no one else got invited. And then, you know, basically loads of people are making videos saying how it's gone wrong and they're upset and they're angry. And then the founder came online. She made a video where she was kind of crying and she wasn't really taking accountability. She was just like, oh, these are just the people who, like, make the most. I'm sorry. It's not really a PR trip, when it was. So I think there's two ways they went wrong. One is the fact that they didn't include anyone else. Like, I just don't understand how in 2023 you can have a PR trip where there's, like, 15 people and everyone looks the same. Like, I personally just don't understand that. And then the second thing is, like, on their Instagram page, though, they used a diverse talent. So for their Instagram, they know how to be strategic to make it look like, oh, we've got a diverse range of people, whatever. But then when it came to the trip, you didn't want to bring everyone on. Like, that just doesn't look good for you guys, and it wasn't. And then the fact that they didn't take accountability as well, like, frustrating, you know, instead of crying and, like, trying to get the sympathy card, you should have just taken accountability for it. So
just one of those things you can't believe even no one flagged.
Like, no one, I'm just so confused. Like, yeah. The pictures came out and everyone literally looks the same. It was really bad. I think it's ruined their brand a little bit on TikTok, yeah, to be honest.
And we need less crying videos. Please. As we look to the future, actually, I'll do some questions before I get to this part. Thank you again. We've got a couple of questions to go through. What's the three things you wish brands would stop asking you, and what do you wish they would start asking?
I guess, is this for my personal stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, brands were still asking me. I think sometimes I get, so with my personal stuff, sometimes I get brands who have no real, like, what do you call it, like a portfolio that shows they actually care about Gen Z. And it feels like someone just whispered to their, like, head office, Gen Z's popping, you need to jump on it, find somebody and just get them. And often the people will be like, oh, can we use your audience or can you promote this? And I feel like they're just jumping on it, but I don't know what your credentials are. So that's something that I think would bother me. also the fact that, like, had they done research on what I actually do? So often I also get opportunities from brands where it's not really relevant to what I do or I stand for, my values. So for example, I know this sounds silly, but because I didn't go to uni, sometimes I just don't feel as comfortable promoting uni opportunities because I'm very much team apprenticeships, apprenticeship advocate. And I feel like sometimes they don't actually look into what is it that my values are, what is it that I like. And it's more just about who's got the most following in this section. Use an app like Tagger where you can just find influencers and then reach out. If brands did a better job at actually seeing people's values and the story and the history behind why they do what they do, I think that would be better as well.
What would you call hero influencers who started as content creators but are now living that elite lifestyle like the Sideman?
Oh, that's interesting. I was going to say, before you said Sideman, I was going to say thought leaders. But I don't know if I would say I'd put them
what
in that category.
The
Oh, they're like a group. Like, they're quite successful. Like, they're big.
Okay.
They're big. But they're not, I wouldn't say thought leaders, because, okay, before they said that, I was going to say thought leaders, because that's what I'd position myself as. So it's like, you've gone from doing content, and then you move to a position where you're now in, almost in a way of power, but I wouldn't call myself an influencer either. Although I'm influencing, I'm on the stage, and whatever it is, but it's more thought leadership. Like, I'm actually taking a good purpose and trying to educate and motivate other people. Sidemen, I'm not sure. I would just call them content creators. Honestly, I don't know. For them, I'm not too sure. Because there's a lot of jokes and other things, and there's been controversial things in the past, so I'm not too sure about them.
In the debate of creator versus influencer, where we began, you spoke of Kim Kardashian. Do you have a positive example of using the term influencer?
Yes, I would say somebody like Patricia Bright. She's great. She started out as like a YouTuber ages, like when I was probably like 11 or 12. She was known as Britpop Princess at the time. Then she moved to Patricia Bright. She started out as like a beauty influencer, doing makeup, YouTube, that sort of thing. Now she talks about property, mortgages. She actually helps people with like motivational and inspiring events. So she's someone who went from just makeup, and then because she grew with the money, so she didn't start off rich and where she is now, she grew with that. And then she was like, okay, now I'm here. I'm going to actually motivate others to do the same versus it being unrealistic. And I like people who take you along their journey as well and don't portray a lifestyle that they worked for as it was just easy. And she's someone that does that, so, yeah.
What do you think are the biggest key factors that make a successful influencer slash brand partnership?
Yeah, I think it goes back to my point where I was saying values, where values both align on both sides. I'd also say try your best to not be that annoying brand where you pick someone who's quite authentic and then they send you their brief or the template and you're just tweaking it so much that it sounds nothing like them. Like, I've definitely had that before, because with my whole thing on all things media, sis, I'm not the most professional. Like, I'm going to tell you good stuff. I'm going to tell you how to do your CV. But they will even say, like, I'm cussing them low-key. Like, it's just the joke. It's just the band. It's just how I talk to that audience, because I know what motivates them. And I don't want to be that educational influencer that's unrelatable, because that's not me. So when I do that, brands will be like, yeah, we want to reach audience. But then when I give them my script, they're like, oh, can you change this wording? Oh, can you remove that slang word? And at that point, I don't want to work with you, because it's like, that's just how I speak. That's just what I do. That's how I have the audience I have. So I feel like brands that actually respect the creator or the influencer, allowing them to really like be themselves and trust that they know what they're doing.
Have you ever experienced imposter syndrome in your career? And what would be your tips on confidence?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. At the beginning of my career, I feel like when you're an apprentice, you definitely experience it because you're like 18 going into an environment where there's people way above your age. I mean, I started in a tech startup, a company called Multiverse, which is founded by Ewan Blair. So a lot of people that went there were like very elite, had really like great backgrounds, boarding school. And I was this young girl from Croydon coming in, and it just felt very, like, I just felt very different to everyone. Let's just say that. Even the topics at lunchtime, I couldn't really relate to anyone. So I definitely had imposter syndrome. But I think the things that have helped me is realizing that my difference is the superpower. But when I first started, I would do small things like change my accent or act differently, whatever it was. But actually, over time, I realized that, especially in the creator space and creative media marketing, we need different people. We need different representation, different voices, people from different backgrounds. So it actually turned out to really, I think that's what made me get to where I am now, if anything, the change. So it's just understanding like yourself and what you bring that's different to other people.
We'll finish with questions for now, but as we look to the future, and we want to end the discussion with an inspirational note, could you give some shout outs to the individuals and organizations that are driving real change in the influence industry?
Yeah, the first one is a big one. I'll definitely say to Fenty Beauty. Like, Rihanna just gets it on point. Like, if you've ever seen any of the runways, like, it's just on point, like diverse in every sense of the word, and they do it right and they do it consistently throughout the year. It's not just a one-time thing. So they're great. I'd also say a shout out to smaller companies and agencies like Vamp Agency or 66 Agency, where they basically are black owned and they help black and like ethnic minority creators and influencers get opportunities to exclusive events that we might not have had otherwise, or PR opportunities or gifting that can be really hard when you're sometimes just from certain backgrounds in the beginning. And also, I would say Made by Mitchell, who's another beauty TikTok shop brand, similar to Pink Honey, but they just get it right. They literally get it. He's brilliant. Like when he makes his makeup, he'll swat it on himself. Mm-hmm. You're the little, sorry, the swatch, whatever. But then he'll also have someone who's a completely different skin color, and he'll do any. He's just great. I think he's really good. So he's a good example. I think that's what Pink Honey should look towards for inspiration as well.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. And yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
That's all we have time for. If you'd like to learn more about what we've been discussing, please visit our website, campaignlive.co.uk, where you'll also find details of our subscriptions. And if you enjoyed this episode of the Campaign Podcast, please follow us, like us, and leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Big thanks to Haymarket producer Till Owen. On behalf of the Campaign team, thanks for listening. I hope you'll join us next time.